Welcome, friends, to Running Scared with Coach Christine. I'm Coach Christine, a level 2 RRCA and Galloway Run Walk Run certified coach. If you enjoy a bit of true crime and running, then you have found your corner of the internet, friend. I'm glad to have you here. We're going to go ahead and get right into today's workout. We're going to warm it up with a nice strong walk. So let's get rolling in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Make sure that you are staying tall, you're staying relaxed. By relaxed, I mean you want to make sure that those shoulders are down and back. You're staying light on your feet. You want to minimize any kind of impact to your joints. Now, if you're outdoors, I want you to be super mindful of your surroundings. Maybe even pop out a little bit of an earbud so you can hear anything that's going on around you. It's always a good idea if you are heading out that front door that someone knows where you are heading, friends. So please make sure that you are not a subject of one of my future cases. I appreciate that. I need all the subscribers I can get. If you're inside on the treadmill, I want you to bring the incline on your treadmill up to 1%. This helps to mimic the outdoors and minimize the impact on your joints. Now, before we get a little further into this workout, I want to warn you that we're going to be covering a case that includes vivid details of violence, abduction, rape, and murder. And I know it can be very disturbing and upsetting. If that's not your jam, I completely understand. Please subscribe to the podcast. I'm going to have plenty of lighter fun, some spooky tales in the near future. However, something tells me you kind of knew what you were signing up for when you hit play. Work on warming up. You're looking strong. You're allowing your body to wake up a little naturally. Getting a little bit of inner heat. That'll help to make this workout smoother. We're going to be using the rate of perceived effort. That's AKRPE scale. And it goes from 1 to 10. That helps us to structure this workout. However, we're going to use that RPE scale a little true crime style. So let's think about that one being we're out for an easy peasy lemon squeezy stroll. 10 is, ooh, bish, there's a murderer on the loose heading your way. You better sprint for your life. We're not going to be hanging out of that 10, but we're not exactly going to be at that 1 throughout today either. I'm going to add a link to that RPE a la true crime scale into episode notes. But for right now, just focus on this workout. We're going to have longer endurance periods of strong walking at RPE of 2 to 3, so a good solid power walking pace. Or you can use that stronger segment for a running at a light conversation pace, more about a 3 to 4 on that RPE scale. Those are going to be 7-minute blocks. I'm going to follow them up by a 1-minute choose your own adventure power pickup. Now, what does that power pickup look like? Well, I want to make this a little bit more interactive. I enjoy us being fully immersed into the case. So I'm going to ask you to weigh in with your thoughts. At the end of the 7-minute block, I'm going to ask you to put on your detective thinking cap and you choose a response of what you think so far. You choose your best hunch. So if you choose A, you're going to pick up your pace about 30 to 60 seconds faster than the pace you're using for that 7-minute block. If you choose option B, you're going to do 15 squats, but you're going to make sure to be controlled and mindful of your knees. If you choose option C, you go into jumping jacks during that full 60-second power block. And choose your adventure, commit to the journey. Let's get ready to have fun. If you decide, I am not going to do any of that nonsense, I'm not here to judge you. You do you. But isn't it a little fun to be more adventurous? I sure think so. If you can't do squats or jumping jacks, that's fine. Choose an alternative exercise that you can do for that power minute segment and enjoy owning your power. All right, friends, we have just about another 60 seconds before we kick off today's workout. And I'm going to tell you right now that we have a 2-part series. This case requires 2 workouts and 2 episodes to get the full story. Hey, friends, we're about 45 seconds away before we head into our first endurance block. Remember, 7 minutes. We'll have 3 of those. Each block will have that 60-second choose your own adventure. So stay tall, get a nice deep breath. Bring those shoulders down. Get ready to just get into the details of today's case. We're gonna kick this off in 15 seconds. Get out a little bit
of the suspense.
10 more seconds. Oh yeah. Let's go in 3, 2, 1. Awesome. Let's kick this off. Getting into your first 7-minute endurance block, either walking it out nice and strong or in that light conversation pace. I want you to believe in yourself. Stay tall. Be proud. You laced up. You showed up. You're getting out there. You're going to enjoy yourself. If at any time during this workout you need to pull it back a little bit, you need to take a sip of water, you do you, boo. I'm here for it. All right, let's set the scene to today's case. It's a beautiful, albeit slightly chilly day, February 15th, 1999. Of course, the Prince song comes to mind. Okay. Carol Sund, 43, and her daughter Julie Sund, along with a family friend and Argentinian exchange student Silvina Peloso, 16, were out visiting and hiking one of the nation's most beloved national treasures, Yosemite National Park, located in California. After spending a day enjoying themselves, they packed up their rental car, a red Pontiac Grand Prix Sound, and headed back to their accommodations for the evening. They were staying at the Cedar Lodge, located right outside the most popular entrance to the national park, located in El Portal. Had dinner at the hotel restaurant, and before heading back to their room for the night, they went to the hotel lobby to check out a few videotapes so they could watch a movie or two before going to bed. Next morning, they were supposed to head back to Yosemite for more hiking before driving back to Eureka and flying to San Francisco to meet Jens, Carol's husband, and Julie's dad at the airport before they all caught another flight to head to Arizona. They were going to visit more of the Sun family relatives, evidently Julie's siblings, staying there with some family relatives. They were all going to head over that way. The ladies never showed up to the San Francisco airport. According to Jens, he felt it was important to continue on to Arizona. He just assumed that the flight was delayed and they would catch up there. I'm trying to set the stage back to 1999. Cell phones, people had them, right? But maybe he just assumed that the cell phone wasn't working. I don't know. Whatever, a little weird there, but okay. Jens arrived in Arizona, where the couple's 3 adopted children were staying with relatives. However, his wife, daughter, and family friend never made it there. So since he hadn't heard from his family, he reported them missing. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say this is where I would normally think this dude offed his wife and the kids and he's trying to cover it up. But alas, we shall have to dig a bit deeper into this case to see if my initial hunches are correct. The police went out to the Cedar Lodge. They searched the room. They found no signs or foul play or struggle. The rental car was missing and appeared that Carol, Julie, and Silvina had gotten up and headed back up to Yosemite for a day of hiking, possibly. Now, the road to El Portal to Yosemite entrance is generally called the all-weather route, as it is one of the more passable roads during winter weather storms, but it's not unheard of for drivers to lose control of their cars and careen off the side of the mountain. Insert my worst nightmare here, as I am hella afraid of falling off the side of a mountain. But okay, back to the story at hand. Jens was adamant, though, that this was not like Julie to disappear without a trace. Not the only one that questioned Jens, though. Local law enforcement officials weren't really sure if they needed to get more involved because they got to thinking that Carol's disappearance was more of a domestic dispute. Great work. We have just a few minutes here before we have our first power segment. However, Jens was like, look, home slices, I love my wife, I love my kid. Her friend is pretty cool too. I ain't got nothing to hide. I want to find them. I need you to take me seriously. He submitted to questioning by the FBI. He was really determined to find his family. So the Sund family, Modesto, began posting flyers from the Central Valley to the foot of the Sierras, with the missing trio's pictures. 4 days after Carol, Julie, and Sylvina disappeared, a teenager in Modesto, California, 80 miles from the lodge that they were staying at, found a wallet with Carol's driver's license and credit cards. This is when the search finally started to heat up. The authorities and the Sun family went all out, and I do mean all out. Jen's brother-in-law searched the region from a private plane. Who got a private plane like that? Okay. Police and the FBI became fully involved, and soon there were more than 120 law enforcement agents combing the mountains. Search parties combed the park, but there were no other signs of the women or the red Pontiac Grand Prix Carol had rented for the vacation with her daughter and friend. Despite a $250,000 reward offered by Sun's wealthy family, see, I told you, that private plane, I knew that money wasn't an issue there. Who has $250,000 and a private plane? Okay. $250,000 reward for any information that would lead to the trio, but they also added a $50,000 reward for any information that would lead to the rental car. They were hoping to get anything to point them in the direction of the trio, but there was no hint of the whereabouts. The FBI sent out yet another lead investigator to Cedar Lodge and questioned the hotel staff, but cleared the employees from suspicion of their involvement. And in searching through the room that had been padlocked, again, it appeared that everything was normal. There's no signs coming in, so it appeared to be at a dead end. But about a month after they disappeared in March, a hiker stumbled upon a torched car in the mountains off of Highway 108 in Tulum County, about an hour away from the lodge. It's always hikers or you folks that run out there in the early morning that find these discoveries. So let's use this as a good time to check in with our form and scan our surroundings. Are your shoulders down and back, chest open, arms by your side? Whether you're in a walk or run, you're gonna keep your arms at a 90 degree angle, and it's your turn to weigh in. A, does the car belong to Carol Sund, and will we find the women with it? If you think so, that's when you need to pick up your pace. If you're using that RPE scale, you're gonna go up to a 5 or a 6 or 30 to 60 seconds faster than you're currently moving. It's B, it's a different car, helps to get the authorities, but it's a different car, but it helps to get the authorities on the right track. You need to do 15 squats, my friend. And then C, if your answer is C, this car has no bearing on today's case, but I just thought it'd be fun to pop it in to make you work out a little harder for this power segment. Then you will do jumping jacks for this 60 seconds. Let's choose our adventure and go in 3, 2, 1. Let's do it. Your power rock stars, whatever it is that you choose, fully engage in it, fully own it, and have fun. At the end of the day, that's exactly what you should be doing anytime that you decide to lace up and get in a workout. You're working a little harder, maybe getting a little bit more into that sentence pace, that 50 to 60% of your max effort on that RPE scale. Maybe you're hustling even a little bit harder. Don't get out into that sprint just yet. We have a lot of time together. I don't want you to waste all of your energy here. We're going to be getting back into our 7-minute endurance block in just 10 seconds. You got it. Take it all the way in. 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. All right, my friends. Car did turn out to be the red Pontiac, and inside the trunk, burned beyond recognition, were the charred bodies of Carol Sund and Sylvina. There was no sign of Julie at this point, or at least none that the authorities could find near the car. 6 days later, the FBI received an anonymous letter with a crudely drawn map and a message. The message read, "We had fun with this one." So they followed the map. The searchers found Julie Sund not too far from the rental car, near a mountain lake, actually. Fortunately, she was deceased. Her throat had been slashed and her body was oddly posed. Her hair was like fanned out around her head. Her legs were splayed apart. Her arms crossed over her chest. She was naked except for a 2-inch piece of black duct tape around her left ankle. And then this is where I want, and I'm really not kidding. kidding at all. If you are a forensic psychologist or you know someone who is, can you have them reach out to me? I gotta know what's up with this weirdness of like posing bodies. Do these killers have some weird fetish with like Barbie dolls? Do we need to just buy them a Barbie doll? Because I'm down with taking up like some kind of crowdfund for that or something to keep them entertained and keeping women safe. So let's talk about who this killer could be. Authorities clearly knew that they were working with someone willing to go a bit further to kill and torture women. Also knew that there was potentially a getaway vehicle because whomever killed them and left behind the torched car, it was in an area that was too remote to really walk back to civilization or get back to town. They go back to retrace their steps again. And they land on an employee at the Cedar Lodge, Carrie Stainer. But after speaking with him and the other employees at the lodge, they clear him completely. They can clear all of his fellow co-workers because they all seem to have pretty okay alibis and no real criminal histories. They went to work on figuring out what was up with this wallet in Modesto and the potential getaway car. They came to the conclusion that it was likely the handiwork of two unsavory characters that resided in the area, Eugene Dykes and Michael Larick. They were associated with a group of like meth users in California. These were super bad dudes with super long history of violence. So kind of they were starting to connect all the dots, right? They brought them in, detained them for questioning. And then Dykes is like, yeah, we did it. He starts to kind of give them these details. He weaved an account of how it went down. So they combed his car. And they found fibers in the car that matched clothing that belonged to Carol Sund. So boom, we got them, right? End of story. Well, the creepers that horrifically abducted, tortured, and killed these women? But what about the handwritten note? Because Larick and Dykes were already detained when the FBI received the note and the map. Did they work with someone else? Were they refusing to give up the investigators more details? The details just kind of weren't adding up here. So again, the investigators going to give them a lot of kudos. They did not give up. They went back to the hotel room and combed through the contents of the hotel room, and they were able to create a timeline. They knew for a fact the women were in their room till at least 10:34 p.m. due to a timestamp on photos they had taken while watching the rental movie. The girls looked happy. There was no signs of distress. So what happened? Why would they leave their hotel room? And how did a killer get in to their room, manage to take all three of them without signs of struggle? My friends, they figured out that Carol had been killed close to 10:34 p.m. So they knew it had to be someone that was near or at the lodge. And they settled on Sam Watt, the night cleaning guy that worked at the adjoining restaurant that the trio had eaten at the night that they were abducted and killed. Not only did he not really have a super solid alibi, but they found blood on his work clothes that he had stashed in his laundry bag. So with Watt, Larick, and Dykes in custody, the investigators were hard at work trying to connect the dots and firm up a solid case. Okay, my friends. This is a great time to check in again. We're about halfway through our time together. That's right, halfway through. It's flying by. So if you need to turn around and get a bit closer to home, this is a great time to do so. I want you to check in with your form here. Make sure that you're staying in a good conversation pace. So either if you're in a power walk or you're in that light run, I want you to be able to, if we were side by side, you could say to me, what in the world is wrong with these people? And not lose your breath. We're not working in breathless here. We're going to leave that more towards that power segment and power interval. So let's return to the case. We have a couple more minutes until our next choose our own adventure. While the investigators were hard at work, they weren't the only ones. Because on the morning of July 22nd, 1999, so the same year, a Yosemite park ranger stops by the cabin of Joey Armstrong, a 26-year-old park naturalist. She was supposed to meet her friends the night before for a camping and hiking trip, but she never arrived. You know where I'm going with this, right? Mm-hmm. Why are we gonna have another person go missing? I hate this. Well, the ranger went inside Joey's cabin and he saw that it was a complete disarray. A tussle had gone down without a doubt. But that's not where the story ends. Once the investigators were called, they identified tire tracks of two different vehicles and a man's sandal. Let's talk about this real quick. Never in my wildest nightmares did I think of being kidnapped by somebody wearing sandals. But alas, here we are. Okay. Back to the case, they follow the tire tracks. They see another stop where they find more sandal tracks and a drag pattern. They follow the drag pattern and find Joey. Her body was posed almost identically like Julie's. Her pants had been unbuttoned and unzipped, and her throat wasn't just slit. She had been fully decapitated. Authorities waste no time. They call it an APB to alert rangers to be on the lookout for a vehicle that may have this type of tire tread. A park ranger saw a man sunbathing in the valley with a backpack next to him. I don't know that that's suspicious, but she said that she felt like he was suspicious. She asked to look inside of his backpack, and he refused. So they take him in for questioning, and they learn his name is Kerry Stainer. He is the maintenance man at the Cedar Lodge. They had already interviewed him, but, well, that's where you get to weigh in. Okay, friends, we've got a bunch of people at play here, so I'm going to have you choose which one you think it is. Is it A? Is it a group of folks working together? Maybe the meth dudes, the restaurant guy, and the maintenance man? If that's your thought, you're going to pick up the pace for this power interval. Is it B? Somebody else they yet haven't found and the investigators are barking up the wrong tree? If that's your thought, then I want you to get in those 15 squats. Or is it C? Is it just one person acting alone, a true deviant and loner driven by violent lust? If this is your response, it's time to get in those jumping jacks. Let's go in 3, 2, and 1. 60 seconds here. Let's go, let's go. Got this, friends. I know you do. All right, rock stars, about 30 seconds in. Have just one final endurance segment on the other side of this. We're doing absolutely awesome. We're wrapping up in 15. Taking it all the way through for 10. And 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Well, my friends, if you are doing jumping jacks during that power choose your own adventure segment, then you were correct. It was just one person acting alone. But Kerry Stainer, where we left off at the story, he totally checked out. There's nothing suspicious or important was found in his backpack. He had a really solid story as to what he had been doing that day, and he willingly submitted a DNA sample upon the request of the police. So they get the sample. He moves on with life. You know, they let him go. Meanwhile, the investigators are still hard at work. They're following every lead possible, and they find, unfortunately, Joey's head. It had been thrown into a nearby ditch. They weren't really sure what was going on with that. They just knew that it was something this person was trying to throw them off. But they discovered that Joey also, she kicked major ass. She didn't go down without a fight. And luckily, because she wasn't willing to go down without a fight, they had tons of evidence. They just had to comb through it all. They could tell that she had somehow gotten away from her kidnapper. She had been chased and overcome, unfortunately. And that process of being chased down and her running away helped them to kind of just keep finding more and more clues. So it was definitely a little messier than the first time around. So who knows at this point, is this really even the same individual? But they're thinking so. So they started thinking, maybe the Stainer guy saw something and we just didn't ask the right questions. So let's head on over to his work and see if he can possibly fill us in on some more information. But nope, he wasn't there. Upon his July 23rd release, Stainer returned to the lodge and tried to quickly sell his belongings. Before he packed up and left, his boss said he never showed up to work, which wasn't quite like him. So, of course, I know you're thinking, danger, danger, Will Robinson. This doesn't sound good. The police quickly start to put together and issue a bolo through the media. I'd never heard of a bolo before. It's not like YOLO. It's a be on the lookout. But I guess that, hey, if you do YOLO, you only live once, you should also bolo, be on the lookout for creepers, which is a great time to check in with you. Are you still running and walking tall? Are you keeping your eyes on the horizon? Your chin is up. You better be. I want your eyes on the prize. You're kicking asphalt on this workout. You're getting get back home nice and safe. It just so happens that Jeanette DeMont is at a nudist colony. She's living her best life. It's a nudist colony called Laguna del Sol. It's a few hours away from Yosemite. When a guy asks her at the bar, what's your name? What's your sign? And she's like, dude, mind your own business. I saw you on the news. Actually, she didn't say that out loud, but I bet you she was thinking it. She immediately goes over, calls the authorities. The FBI was like, oh, snaps, keep him talking. We are on our way. So FBI agents Jeff Renick and John Bowles, they respond to the call at Laguna del Sol. The manager comes out and says, hey, yeah, he's here. He's inside. You're going to find him super easily because he's the only one wearing clothes. So, okay, Stainer. Now, if you ever, come on. You don't go hide out in a nudist colony and then decide to be modest all of a sudden and cover up all your junk. That looks hella suspicious, dude. You gave yourself away. Anyway, Renick and Bowles are like, hey, dude, can you come back in for questioning again? He was super cooperative and agreed to talk. He was chatty about things. We have just a few more minutes here before our final Choose Your Own Adventure power segment and our cool down. Later that day, in a surprising confession to Agent Jeff Renick, and Stainer decides to, yeah, you know what? I kind of like you, Jeff. I feel comfortable with you. I'm going to let you know I did it. I killed all four women. Stainer says, I've been fantasizing about killing women since I was a child. He gives them all the details. He said that he wasn't going to originally kill Carol, Julie, and Sylvina. Now, this is the part where it's going to get a little bit more detailed. I'm going to do my very, very best to give you details without creeping you out because I want you to be able to sleep tonight. So bear with me here. So when Cary Stainer's in his 30s, he drives his car, 72 pale blue International Scout, like pretty much everybody has an SUV, an all-terrain vehicle up there, to El Portal, and he got his job at the handyman at the Cedar Lodge. I can speak, I promise I can. The rustic lodge was just 7 miles outside of the gate of Yosemite, and he's like, I'm gonna live my best life out here because I'm gonna just get high, and then I will go and cavort and hike and then do my maintenance gig. And he also liked to think that there was a Bigfoot that lived out there, and he was excited to see Bigfoot. He loved to tell people about Bigfoot. But okay, anyway, that is relevant, but we'll talk about that more. He goes on to tell the FBI agent that, yeah, he was planning to kill his girlfriend at the time, Lena, and her daughter on Valentine's Day, because who needs roses and chocolates when you can just kill them? But his plans were foiled when he saw someone in their vicinity, like lurking around their home. So he drove back to the lodge where he stayed and worked and noticed that because it was off season, there weren't many people there, but there was a trio of women that appeared to be alone. And in his taped confession, he says, as I walked, there was a red car in the building all by itself. And I noticed the window was open. The curtain was open. I could see there were two young women and a mom with no manses. So he came up with a plan of getting into their room by saying, hey, I'm the maintenance dude and you've got a leak in the plumbing. I need to get in. And he knocked on the door and he told Carol that. And she was like, nah, you should come back in the morning. And he's like, fine, I'll go get the manager. And she's like, oh, okay, if we're gonna get the manager, just go ahead and come in. So she opens the door, lets him in. He gets in there, pulls a gun, makes them all lay down, and tells them that they all need to be quiet. All right, friends, we're almost done here. It's your last Choose Your Own Adventure. This time I'm just gonna let you pick it up for the full minute. Do your 15 squats or do your jumping jacks, whatever it is to really enjoy that full 60 second of owning your power. We're going to have a cool down on the other side. You've gotten a great workout so far. Owe it to yourself to make this power segment your strongest. Yes, you do. So we're going to pull into that power segment in 5, 4, 3, 2, And one, let's go. Just 60 seconds here, knowing that we have our cool down walk and the rest of this story on the other side. Keep at it, friends. Regardless of what you're doing, I want you to be very proud of yourself. You got out there, you got in a good workout. You're taking time for yourself. Feeling strong, getting in a good sweat session. 30 more seconds. Keep it up. I know. You're feeling like it's not gonna finish, but it will. Just 20 more seconds. Don't let up just yet. This is where I like to say, feet don't fail me now. 15 seconds. Got this, rock star, for 10. You're gonna be smiling in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Amazing. Go ahead and pull it back into your light cool down. Give yourself a pat on the back. Grab a sip of water if you need. Stick with me though. We still have a little bit more details to learn here during this cool down. You're walking nice and tall and strong. Well, Carrie Stainer goes on to say that he strangled Carol pretty much immediately. He planned to sexually assault both Sylvina and Julie, the teenage friends, but Sylvina wasn't having it. She started to yell for help. And he freaked out. He thought, oh no, she's going to call somebody here. They're going to hear. So he strangled her at the hotel room as well. Julie was stunned. She's just saw her mother and her friend get killed. So she went silent. So he put Carol and Sylvina's body into the trunk of their rental car. And then he went on to act out his fantasy that Julie was his girlfriend before he eventually raped and killed her. He drove the car up to the remote area, took the personal effects because he had planned to try to throw people off. Worked on disposing Julie's body. He then went back out to the car before burning it down. He somehow got a cab to come pick him up. I don't know how she didn't, but whatever. He tells the cab driver that, hey, do you believe in Bigfoot? So evidently this Bigfoot thing of his, forensic psychologists have said that his fascination with Bigfoot is kind of like an homage to his internal demons, where he kind of sees himself as this creature. I don't know about that because, again, he was really good at covering his tracks, so I don't think it was just plain old craziness. He drove to Modesto after he gets back to the lodge. He threw Carol's wallet and her personal effects out the window to help throw officials off, and some of those personal effects were found by the meth dudes, and they figured they would try to sell that stuff. Hence how the fibers got into their car. So that was just a fortuitous turn of events for Carrie. But he watched the news. He kept his cool. And he noticed when they got Larrick Dykes, those meth dudes, that he had an idea to further cover his tracks. He'd write a handwritten note and a map pointing them to where Julie's body was at, where he knew that he had absolutely disposed of all evidence on her physical body. He paid a kid to lick the envelope, and again, he really thought out all of the details. So he's feeling good about himself. He's like, yeah, I just lived out my fantasy and I'm seemingly actually getting away with murder. On the day that Joey Armstrong disappeared, Carrie was driving his car to Forista when he saw her, and she was just packing up her car, and he's like, I was just throwing rocks in the creek, just happened to notice her walking out again and again from her cabin, and it seemed like she was alone, he later confessed. So he held her at gunpoint in her cabin as he bound her with duct tape and forced her in his car. And as she was driving, he reports she got out through the window and started running. Carrie was able to catch up to her and slit her throat. Her struggle, though, and her fight to live was what invariably helped the authorities catch up to him and was undoubtedly to credit she helped save future women from the same demise. Carrie Stainer pled guilty to the Armstrong murder in 2001. He was convicted of the other three counts in 2002, sentenced to death. Since his arrest, he is still living out his life in San Quentin State Prison on death row. However, my friends, next episode of Running Scared, we're going to learn that this is not the Stainer's family first brush with abduction, rape, and tragedy. We're going to dive into Carrie's childhood a little bit, and we're going to learn how his own brother was abducted when his brother was 7 years old. and learn a little bit more about that case and how that impacted Carrie and may have been really what precipitated him going into this violent rage. Well, you did an amazing job. I want to hear from you. Did you enjoy the workout? Do you have feedback? Do you have maybe a case you are interested in me featuring? Please reach out to me at christine@runwinefinishlines.com. I'll drop that into the episode notes as well. Before we wrap up here, I'm going to ask you to rehydrate, refuel. I want you to get some recovery work in. And then let's review our lessons learned. Lessons learned is that somebody comes knocking at your hotel door at 10:30 at night. No can do, my friends. I am not letting you in. That is lesson number one. And lesson number two is fight for your life. Great work, Rockstar. Thank you so much for Running Scared with Coach Christine.